The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com. Interesting story Friday afternoon in Josephine County when former Jackson County Commissioner, current City of Gold Hill City Manager Lily Morgan, she's also a former state rep, ended up getting together with a group, and they instituted a petition to recall Commissioner John West. All sorts of claims. Ignoring the will of the people seems to be a big part of that, and also for actions facing lost revenues, increased costs and cuts to services, not following the laws and various things like that, health and safety, et cetera. So, John, given that you apparently are the subject of this petition, Commissioner John West, we welcome you from Josephine County. How are you doing this morning? Why don't we talk a little bit about some of the claims here?
Good morning, Bill. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm just amazed with this list of laundry that they threw out there. You know, it's one of the things they realistically couldn't come up with anything, so they made up this whole list, and so the people sees this big list and says, "Well, geez, he must have done something wrong." You know, how can they have this big list? Well, it's all fabricated mistruths. So,
okay. Well, why don't we talk about some of these things? Tell us about the problem that they're having with the Pipe Fork. This is that that land that's out near Williams, right? The land near Williams, and I know that there was an attempt to get the county to sell this to a nonprofit group that was then planning on selling it to the BLM. And preserving it, I guess, was the whole purpose of this. And the board ended up voting this down for a particular reason, or else it's been delayed, or something's happened here. Could you tell us what happened with this one? Because this seems to be a big one. I don't understand why, but let's hear it.
So Pipe Fork property is 320 acres of Josephine County Forest property, owned by the taxpayers, it's managed by the Josephine County Forestry Department, and there's about 7 million board feet of timber on it. And so this started roughly 4 years ago, way before my time. And the nonprofit group said, "Hey, we want to purchase this from you. We don't want it logged, and we want it left open."
And by the way, they wanted it purchased at a discount, if I understand correctly, right? They didn't want to pay the full market value for it. Wasn't that also part of it?
Yep.
Okay.
So here this year, or in 23, when I become commissioner, they had made an agreement. They wanted to purchase it at $430,000 less than its value. And because they're a 501 C3, the state statute says that you can, the forestry department can sell it to them at a discounted price. Mm-hmm. And so our hands were a little bit tied there because of that statute. And so we looked at it and said, okay, you don't want to log it, but you want to leave it open to the public, and that would be left open to the citizens of Josephine County. Any other citizen could go on the property and enjoy the waterfall, the birds, the deer. They can sing, whatever they want to do. And yep, that's what they want to do. Well, then it come down to the last, I call it the 11th and a half hour. We said, listen, we want to put some deed restrictions in there because you're selling it to the government. And we already know how the BLM is, because there's Port Orford cedar root rot on the property and some other issues. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure that the government doesn't block it off like they do the rest of the land to the public. And they said, oh, no, we don't care about leaving it open to the public anymore. We want it in the government.
But you see, to me, that was, they never cared about it being open to the public. And yet that was the reason why they came before the board in the first place. We want to make sure that this stays open to the public. So this is just another example of grab land and lock it up. This is what I was talking with Herman Bearchecker about several times over the last few weeks about that.
Yeah. So, you know, I said, listen, you know, put a deed restriction on it And then the BLM can't do that. And we had the BLM, and they said, well, you know, we would be in agreement that we would do our best to leave it open. I said, listen, who trusts you guys? You guys don't manage our millions of acres properly. You block us off. I said, I can take you and show you road after road that has a gate on it and says no public access. Public allowed.
So Lily Morgan and the group have a problem with this. They would really like that land locked away, or they don't care if it gets locked away from the people.
They just want it out of the county's hands. And now they're saying, well, we're not against logging. If the BLM come in and select log it, we're fine. Well, wait a minute. You didn't want it logged. And if somebody's going to log it, why don't we log it? And we'll make an extra $400,000 or $500,000 for the taxpayers. So why would we give them something that, you know, but they said, well, there's 30 or 40 of us out here in Williams and we deserve it. But they keep using this word and I read it. Well, that is Williams Fork Watershed.
Oh, okay. No. What is that? Your phone cut out there, Commissioner. What was that?
So they keep saying that this is the Pike Fork Watershed and that this is Williams water. Clean drinking water. There is no domestic water rights on this creek. Williams does not get serviced by this water for the town of Williams. And they keep using that because most citizens don't understand that's false. That's just completely false. So people start thinking, oh, well, we need to protect it because it's Williams drinking water. It has nothing to do with Williams drinking water.
All right. There's another claim here I wanted to touch on there. A lot of allegations, many ethics charges filed against you by, I imagine, some of the people behind this. Would that be fair? You want to address any of that? What's happened to it?
So I had roughly 13 ethics charges filed against me. I believe 11 of them's been dismissed. There's, I think, two that are left. Outstanding, which the state says it's just going through the formality of the paperwork to dismiss those.
So is this about campaign finance or something else? What are they?
No, I have zero campaign finance violations, none. I hired a firm when I did my campaign. I hired a firm and I got a 100% clean bill of health. Every month I got the state give me thumbs up that everything was perfect. I've never had a campaign violation.
All right. So just not happening. And what two ethics charges are left? You know?
So one is from a citizen from Williams who said.
Oh, interesting. From Williams, where Pipe Fork is located, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And this citizen is claiming that I voted no not to sell Pipe Fork because supposedly I owned property next to it, which I don't. And that by me not selling it, it was going to make my property worth more money.
But you said you have no property next to it.
No, I don't own no property next to it.
Oh, okay. All right. And
their information was wrong. And this is, so when you send these allegations up, the state has to look at them and go, oh, well, you know, so they have to investigate. This has taken a monstrous amount of time by the state investing, but they have to do it. They have to investigate it, and it costs the taxpayers a lot of money, but they don't care because the narrative here is, oh, look at all these ethics charges, but none of them are true. None of them are, but they want to go with, oh, he's just got a lot of ethics charges against him.
So the fact that people have filed ethics charges, even if they're not true or false allegations, that then is what some smoke, you know, we'll put some smoke in the air or throw some dust up in the air.
Yeah.
It must be. There must be something wrong with John, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Now, I figured that something like this was going to come up. Now, I imagine some of them, I guess you're really the only person on the board right now that would be maintained from the current regime because, right, that we had Commissioner Dan DeYoung resign, right? He left. And Herman is just gone. He's done at the end of this term, right? And so you're the only one here that is actually going to be an incumbent which hangs on. Do you think that has something to do with trying to do a recall right now?
Well, I think one is they're trying to damage me, and two is they're afraid that if I stay in office, that the people they want, if they don't get both of them in, or if they only get one of them in, and that they won't be able to move their agenda. So the way to do it is to try to get rid of me, because I'll be the experienced commissioner on the board. I will have the most county knowledge of what's going on.
Okay. Got
it. So they can't control me.
All right. Another one of the claims here is ignoring the will of the people. This involving the OSU extension law, the tax, and funding the OSU extension service. Now, I talked with Herman a lot about this on our Tuesday segment that we would always dig into this one. Tell me what your approach was when it came to the OSU extension service.
So I had many conversations with the director, Chris Elliott from OSU. I explained all of my concerns. Here it is. OSU gets $441,000 of Josephine County taxpayer money under the levy, and then they get roughly $765,000 of grant money from state and federal grants. But those grants are based only if they get the $441,000, and that grant money specifically has to go to our district, our 4-H OSU district here, and they don't get it unless they get our money. So I said, listen, that money belongs to the district, and they said, no, that money belongs to us. And I said, wait, no. So I explained it. They disagreed, and I said, listen, you have 14 employees in Corvallis, and you say they service Josephine County. I need to know what they do for Josephine County when they come down here. And they said, nope, that's our employees, that's our business. And I said, wait a minute,
it's being paid by Josephine County money.
Yes, paid by Josephine County money. Then I get looking, and I go, I find out that they're paying, you have to pay $25 to be a volunteer for Master Gardeners. And I'm like, wait a minute, they're volunteers, you're charging volunteers $25? And they said, yeah, we charge any kid that wants to be in 4-H $20. And then if you're a kid and you don't get your dues in by December 31st, they charge you a $5. These kids, they charge them a $5 late fee. And I said, are you insane? We pay you $441,000 and you want to charge a kid a late fee? And I said, so in your financials, where is this money? Oh, well, that's our money. I said, wait a minute, you're charging our citizens and our kids this money, but I can't see what you're doing with it? And they said, no, that's our money.
And so you were one of the votes then to not fund it, right?
I said, unless you're willing to come clean, I voted no. And I said, I will not tolerate it. You know, what started this whole thing was Joe's Place. When they told kids they could not wear a cross on their shirt, but you could go in there as a cross dresser, and that was okay because you had more rights than a kid wearing just a cross.
Well, while cross dressers were fine, cross wearers not so good within the 4-H industry, right? That kind of thing.
That's what started this whole thing for the investigation. When this started, then it caused everybody to start focusing on it as a whole. And then when we got looking at the budget, we're like, wait a minute, there's some real financial issues here that we need to. And then the more we dug, the more OSU dug in, and that's the rest of the story.
So. All right. So that's your explanation of that. So that's another one of the claims here in the petition. What about unqualified political people being hired? And I think this, what are they talking about, Michael Sellers? Is that what they're alluding to or alleging?
Yes, yes. So this is, I call it the echo chamber. These citizens are being led by different people that are employed by Josephine County that's not a, quote, a fan of Michael Sellers. So they're saying that he wasn't qualified. He has a master's in cybersecurity. He held every schooling and every qualification that you could ask for an IT director. And we put the IT and combined IT and emergency management under one department. He held all the ISO ratings, all of the qualifications for that emergency manager director position. We saved $95,000 by combining the two departments. That allowed us to pay the bulk of another deputy's salary to put more law enforcement on the ground. And we've got somebody that's qualified in both positions, meets and beats and exceeds all the qualifications we asked for.
Now, are they just PO'd because he used to work for Herman in the state capitol?
Yeah.
Is that really what bugs them?
No, it is. That's it. And at the end of the day, they try to build in the county. Departments try to build their own little group and allies, and they're worried that, oh boy, you know, maybe this won't be successful now because people are on to us. And, you know, this isn't about individuals or anyone else. This is about the citizens. We're supposed to be there to work and serve the citizens of Josephine County, but this has turned out not to be that way. And they feel that I'm a threat to them because I said it point blank in my campaign. If you don't work and serve the people of Josephine County, you might want to go get a job elsewhere.
How did the vote on that library district withdrawal? This had to do with the whole thing with Mike Pelfrey a number of months ago. And courts ended up smacking down the allegation that you could withdraw out of the district here. Do you think that was a bad thing overall? They're claiming this is another one of the reasons they want to bounce you out, this group.
So there's a little misconception, Bill, is the state law says that you have the right to opt into the district, but you also, after 2 years of the district being in service, you have the right to opt out of the district. So what had happened is we had the Pelfreys asked to opt out, which that is their state right lawfully, but the wrong paperwork was used for them to opt out. So what we found out was when the library put their hand up and said, hey, we don't agree with this, and we said, okay.
Well, of course, no district's going to agree to someone escaping paying the money. That's just a bureaucracy. That's what a bureaucracy is going to do, okay?
Right, exactly. So we said, listen, maybe we don't have the proper paperwork. So the commissioners voted to freeze it. We're not going to allow anyone to opt in and opt out until we get this paperwork right, because we found out that our opting in paperwork was incorrect too, but they never said a word about that. Mm-hmm. So during this time, we froze it, and then the library goes and files a lawsuit in circuit court, which was not needed because we had already froze the process until we got the paperwork correct. So the judge never ruled on this case because we fixed the paperwork.
So the fact that the library spent the money, that's on the library. That's stupidity on the library's part then.
It is. It's total stupidity, but they want to blame us, the commissioners, when after we fixed the paperwork and showed it to them, they dropped their case and said, oh, your paperwork meets the standards. We're fine. So
oh, okay.
They dropped their case.
All right. All right. The final allegation in the petition to withdraw or to recall you has to do with threatening community safety. Where are you on that? What's that all about?
So there's another misguided work. So they're talking about the FireWise program. So the state of Oregon has cut funding to our FireWise program.
What does FireWise do, Commissioner?
What's that?
What does FireWise do?
So FireWise program, we have, so what it was we had a person hired, and so did the city, And those people went around and evaluated people's homes and for safe spacing of trees and limbs and vegetation around their homes. And we were getting all this grant money to help people clear defensible space around their homes. Well, the state sent us a letter and said, listen, we're going to be cutting a lot of the funding for that. And so you need to act appropriately. So we met as a board and said, listen, we can cut the city person out on the FireWise program, but we can keep the county person. And instead of the program running out of money this year by, say, October to December, we would have, by doing that, we would be able to keep this FireWise program running till the middle or later of next year, and then let Yunker and Noah and let them go and work on trying to get funding back for us.
And from what I understand, is that on you're kind of saying that this was a unanimous board vote, wasn't it? I mean, this was not a controversial vote at all. It was 3-0. Even, you know, Dan DeYoung and Herman and you voted in the affirmative here, right?
Right. Yes. It was a 3-0. So it wasn't just me. And none of this is just my vote. Most of these votes, except for Pike Fork and except for OSU, those two were 2-1 votes. Everything else that could be put in here, most of it was 3-0 votes, except for the hiring of Michael Sellers. Commissioner DeYoung, he abstained because he said he wasn't qualified to make that decision.
Okay. All right. Well, here we go. It's time for a little bit of drama. You ever get the impression that that Josephine County is kind of going the direction of what the city of Gold Hill used to be with kind of recall and that kind of controversy? Is that kind of where we are at this point here, Commissioner?
Well, you know, it's kind of sad, whether it's me or whoever. What it is, and I'm not on social media, but people are sending me, different posts. And we're dividing the community again. My door, Bill, is always open. If you can contact me at any time, you can come and see me. I'm out in the community all the time. And, you know, if there's something you don't like or an answer to a question you want, I that's my job, and I'm there to give it to you. Now, you may not always like my answer, but I'll be straight up forward with you and tell you why. And, when the Lily Morgan thing was going on, when I was trying to, persuade her not to be county commissioner, I went to her first. Before I ever went into the media, because my pastor told me to do this, he said, go to her, explain your issues and all your problems and see if you guys can work it out. I did that. Spent an hour, 2 hours with her in her office. You know what? She's never come to me. She's never said a word. In fact, the only thing she said at a fundraiser event at Joe's place, and I have people that was standing right there, she come up to me and said, oh, John, you're just doing a wonderful job as commissioner, and your stance on OSU 4-H was exactly right. You made the right decisions, and now she's the petitioner with these in there.
Okay, that doesn't make sense. So she tells you at that meeting, now this is hearsay from you, that she thought you were doing just fine, that you did the right thing on OSU, but now that it's time to do a recall petition, now you're the bad guy.
I have witnesses that stood right there and listened to her say it.
Interesting. Interesting, interesting. All right. Well, Commissioner, you're welcome back anytime you want to talk about that, okay? So when does this recall election happen? Is it going to be the general this fall?
No, they're right now they have 90 days from last Friday to gather their signatures. Then if they're successful on gathering their between 6,500 and 7,000 signatures, if they're successful and the clerk checks them out and says, okay, you have enough signatures, then I have 5 days to respond on what I'm going to do, whether I'm going to resign or fight the recall. And then I think there's a 30-day span. So it would be a special election, and it probably would be in December. Okay. And here's the other thing about that. This special election cost the Josephine County taxpayers roughly $30,000.
All right. Point well taken, but that's okay. Josephine County is rolling in money. We all know that. Said no me
yeah,
ever.
According to, I guess, this group, I'm not sure. They think we are, and we can just waste the money doing this.
All right. Commissioner, good having you on. We'll have you back. And thanks for giving your take on some of the allegations on the petition. Okay?
Yes, sir. Have a good day, Bill.
All right. You too now. Commissioner John West of Josephine County, 741, ran a little bit long. I'm going to call up Glenn Archambault and see if maybe we can reschedule him for tomorrow. I want more time than maybe what we have available to talk about the water and farming. I'll see if he can reschedule. And we'll do some other things, maybe take some open phones and various other things. Want to make sure that we keep you up on some of the other news, including the vice presidential pick, the amazing one from Kamala Harris or Kamala.
This has been an SRN News Special Report. I'm Rich Thomason.
7:45, Mark Seligman. Mark, you're running for Josephine County Commission. How are you? No, actually, you're not running for Josephine. You're running for state rep this time, right? And you wanted to weigh in on the John West recall issue that came up a few minutes ago.
You know, I'm a Democrat, right? I'm a rare Democrat. But I agree with John West on about 90% of his positions. And I agree with all of his positions regarding this recall. But let's talk about Lily Morgan. Here's a person that's had a vendetta with John West for years. And the deal is, she is the $135,000 grant Gold Hill city manager. Before she even was appointed, I had a laundry list of reasons why she should not be appointed. They never really considered it. The number one reason was her support for warrantless searches of hemp farms. In other words, not a warrant, and this bill was thrown out of committee when she was a state representative. And I would have taken her to task on that. Anyway, fast forward to today, she is the lead petitioner in this ridiculous recall of my friend John West. And the deal is, wait a minute. You work as Gold Hill city manager. You live in Josephine County. You don't do anything in Gold Hill other than your job. Why are you the lead petitioner? Do you realize how much responsibility it will take and how much time it will take out of her time to run this? She has to coordinate volunteers. She has to do paperwork. She has to do lots of work. So tonight, I hope to go to the Gold Hill City Council meeting and register my protest of her actions. And I'm going to keep in mind, how did you even pick somebody like this who is for taxes, for regulation as county commissioner, and for warrantless searches of people's homes?
Well, I'll be interested to hear how the council responds to that here, Mark. I appreciate the call. Thanks for checking in, all right? Best of luck. Let me go to next line. Hi, good morning. This is Bill. Who's this?
Good morning, Bill. It's Steve in Medford.
Steve, what's going on?
Well, I got my rogue disposal bill yesterday.
Yours went up too?
It was my rogue disposal bill.
Yeah.
And it was due 8/1.
All right. Now, is this a mail issue or a system with rogue that you're complaining about?
I think it's a mail issue. I can't find the envelope. I just stuff the envelopes that I get and things in a recycling thing, and I can't find it. But I think it's just a mail issue.
Yeah. Do you pay online or do you pay checks with them?
Well, I pay bill pay through my bank.
Okay. The reason I brought this up is that they changed. I got dinged or almost got dinged or almost had my rogue disposal bill not paid because they changed to a new payment system a few weeks ago. And there were some people that were getting, I guess I was one of those people lost between the cracks, didn't realize, and my bill didn't get paid when I thought it did. And I'm wondering if maybe you are one of those people.
I think I caught that. This is just a statement. There is no past due. It just says it was due 8/1, and I got the bill on 8/6, which was Sunday. So
Yeah. Yeah, I would check into that. Well, this could be another example of what happens when we send mail to Portland for sorting. Okay.
Well, that's by the way, I'm drinking coffee this morning in a cup that says Bill Meyer show. So thank you for that.
Oh, glad you came and picked that up here. Thanks, Wild Salmon. Let me go to line one, and then we're going to talk stocks here in a few minutes here and then market how that's going. Good morning. Who's this? Welcome.
It's Jane.
Hey, Jane. It's on your mind.
Okay, I got a couple things.
Of course you do. If you always have at least two.
If people remember, Larry Young and Dandy Young are the ones who brought two electric buses into Grants Pass out of the taxpayer money. And those buses aren't worth anything, so, and they cost a lot of money to charge anyway.
Yeah, so you're thinking that, you know, I remember that that electric bus thing for Josephine County Transit. That was interesting. Are those on the road at this point, or are they not? Do you know for a fact?
I don't know, but if I see one, I get away from it as fast as I can.
they don't blow up that often, Gene. Anyway, what's the other one? What's the other thing you wanted to talk about? What's the other point?
Okay, that rank deal.
Yeah, ranked choice voting
is all for the radical Democrats, so they can do whatever they want and the hell with the people.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring that up. Where I'm coming down, ranked choice voting, of course, very complex, but I could see it get to the point where lots of people will want to run for an election just because you'll have so many of one particular point of view there that they'll try to put their finger on the scale there. I can't help but think that with a lot of progressives bringing up ranked choice voting, it's not because it will not help progressives. Thanks for the call there, Gene. 751, this is the Bill Meyer Show.
This hour of the Bill Meyer Show is proudly sponsored by Phoenix Auto Center Tire Pros on Main Street.
Theme from Shaft in the bumper rotation. Hopefully you didn't get the Shaft yesterday, but a lot of people did. I want to talk with Matt. Matt from Grants Pass, of course, he's a former stockbroker, and I tend to go to him every now and then because you and I will just sit around and shoot the breeze on stocks. You're still in the industry, but in a different way, and so you're able to be a little more, shall we say, I guess, truthful maybe is not the word, but you don't have a dog in many of these fights. Would that be a fair assessment this morning here, Matt? Welcome back to the show.
The fair assessment is, when you work for a brokerage service, you're very restricted on what you can say outside of the brokerage service. They have to sort of stamp everything that comes out of your mouth or anything that you write down. And, you know, I don't do that anymore. It's been, you know, decades.
Yeah. So, in other words, you can actually say what you think about something, which is, in truth, is not welcome a lot of times in the world, you know?
Well, yeah, I guess it depends on who you're talking to, but there is a certain freedom that goes along with that.
Okay.
So, you know, it's nice.
So here it is. Yeah. I take a day off then, and then the market just takes a circle around the drain, at least for a day or so. And it is coming back a bit here. I guess we're looking at the Dow Jones Industrial up a little over a point, a percent, I should say. Same with S&P 500, about a point, 1.5%, that sort of thing. But odds are they're not going to make back that that kind of a walloping they took yesterday in one day, you know, if at all, right? Or is it not?
No. No. It was interesting. This stuff, things started acting a little funky around the 11th of July.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff just started cropping up. And initially, there was a lot of conversation about all the money that was being spent by tech firms and other firms on artificial intelligence, things to improve efficiencies and whatever else. And then it's so funny because analysts are the one who dictate all this. And when analysts change their mind on something, the thing that we focus on changes. And so when NVIDIA and some of the other chip stocks that play into artificial intelligence and some of the computer stocks that do, those were going to the moon. Microsoft included, Oracle, IBM, Dell, for Pete's sake. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, basically a computer is the same as a washing machine in my eyes, but nope. Artificial intelligence, the new chips, and all the other stuff were playing into that.
Well, weren't we joking though about this a few weeks ago, in which artificial intelligence became the new .com? Remember the .com a number of years ago? You put .com in your name, and then all of a sudden, this was like what, around turn of the century, you know, late 90s, I want to say, right?
Yeah, late 90s.
And pet.com will make everybody billions, you know, that sort of thing, right? And then it just blew out, I guess.
Well, what happens is, you know, the rubber meets the road, and either the money that was spent by your firm on artificial intelligence increased your earnings or it didn't. And if you spent a bunch of money on something, you know, I'll use the race car analogy again, but if you spend a bunch of money on a motor, but it doesn't get you any wins, well, then you wasted your money on the motor. Now you got to go find another motor. And so what happened is there are going to be some firms that, you know, are going to see money spent and money invested on artificial intelligence is going to come to the bottom line, and it's going to increase their earnings. In a lot of cases, probably eliminate employees, you know, so save money. And if that happens, then those firms are going to benefit. But if that doesn't happen, then it looks like you just spent a bunch of money that really wasn't going to benefit you at all. And, of course, the shareholders are the ones left holding the bag. So
this could be a little bit of the bloom. It's not that artificial intelligence isn't going to be a thing, but it's not the necessarily to the moon kind of thing. Is that where
we're... Not for everybody.
Yeah.
It's going to benefit some companies, and other companies aren't really going to get, you know, you're going to spend $2 on something and you hope to get $3 or $4 back. Some people are going to spend $2. Company's going to spend $2 and they're going to get $1.87 back.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, you know, we spent the money. It didn't really do much for us. Maybe down the road it will, you know. But you asked me about the carry trade, and that's actually, you know, that's an interesting thing.
And if you could, I kind of ham-handedly explained the carry trade when I first came on. I'm not a guy on this one. You are. Can you explain? And this is what supposedly ticked off the contagion yesterday, because it was Asian stocks first that just took it in the shorts yesterday, and then it spread, and then I think it keyed off of also a jobs report that more or less said that the only people hiring were government. It's only government jobs being created, which doesn't generate any wealth,
aliens.
Right? Right.
Don't leave out the illegal aliens. It was government and illegal aliens who were padding those jobs numbers. So that's those two things. No, the carry trade's not really that complicated. If somebody wants to borrow money in a margin account for stocks, you know, you put up $100 and then you borrow $100 and then you have $200 to buy stock. Well, this is just kind of the same thing, except what you're doing is when you're borrowing the money to buy stocks or bonds or whatever, you want to borrow it at the cheapest interest rate.
Right.
Well, that had been Japan. Japan had negative interest rates for a very long time. And so people were actually borrowing the money in a Japanese currency because the interest was low. And then they were taking that money and speculating in other investments. Well, the problem is the Bank of Japan raised their interest rate, their benchmark, a quarter point last week. And so this didn't actually – it hit Monday, but it didn't start Monday. It started like Thursday, Friday. You started hearing rumblings, and people were like, you know, if they're going to keep raising interest rates, if it's not just one and done, it doesn't appear it's going to be.
So this is one of those things where, like I had mentioned, a lot of speculative rice bowls get broken, right? They were going, hey, you thought you were going to make money off this cheap money. Boom. Sorry, Charlie. Right. That kind of thing.
Yep. And then, so their money wasn't cheap anymore. And when that happens, then, you know, people have to get out of their trades. Well, it's no different than a home. If you own a home cash, if you own the home, you hold the deed, and prices fluctuate up and down, up and down. If you don't intend on moving, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an adjustable rate mortgage and interest rates start moving around on you, a house that was affordable 2 years ago, you may all of a sudden find it unaffordable, which is what happened, by the way, to people who had a lot of these, you know, adjustable rate mortgages and other things. You know, back when interest rates were at 3% or so, they were trying to get into these, I don't know, they call them HELOCs or something like that. And people kept talking to me about them. And what do you think of them? And I said, man, I don't know. Leverage, someone once told me, a wise investor once told me, debt equals death. And so the more debt you have, especially if you're using that debt to speculate, it leads to death. That, you know, quite frankly, When Alan Greenspan was talking about irrational exuberance in the late 90s because of all the speculation that was going on at the time, all the Fed, because the Fed controls margin rates, all the Fed had to do was raise the margin rate, the interest for, you know, or change the percentages that you could borrow. Instead of, you know, being able to put up 50%, you'd have to put up 75%. That would have, you know, sort of pulled the drain plug on it, and there would have been some kind of a settling of the market, but this is what always happens. That's what happened in the financial crisis. You know, people were getting mortgages if you could fog a mirror. And so they were using debt to flip houses. And then people had 2, 3, 4 houses they were trying to flip. And then when the music stops, you're in the middle of all these projects, and now you can't, you have to get rid of things, but you can't. And now you have these mortgages. And so what do you do? And that's basically the carry trade. I don't know what the regulation would look like. I would have to spend, you know, decades trying to understand everything. But it doesn't seem to matter whatever regulation we come up with, because Wall Street is going to come up with a solution for it.
Do you think that the days of making easy money by just buying Apple and buying Tesla and buying Meta and buying Google and all the rest of it, has that been sorely tested now? Because hasn't most of the growth in the stock market really been a small number of stocks overall in the S&P?
Yeah, they call them the Magnificent Seven.
Right.
The answer is no, because this is something I came up with decades and decades ago. Wall Street doesn't make any money when the market goes sideways. They only make money when it goes up or down. So they don't really care which direction it has to go, but it can't go sideways because they can't make money. They could sell options. They could sell calls and puts and speculate and other kinds of things, sure.
But what about we regular schmoes in the middle class here that is trying to, you know, make a buck or two out of a 401k, you know, that kind of thing? I mean, we get squeezed, don't we?
Usually we end up holding the bag. Look, there's one of the biggest problems in investing is that people always want to get in at the top, and they want to get out at the bottom. And it's driven me crazy since I, you know, first got into the business, is when people begin to get excited about stuff, then that's almost always the top. You'll see most of the volume that's traded on a stock occurs in like the last, you know, 20% or 30% of a move. You'll see the volume increase. Well, if the stock drops after that, somebody was buying at the top. Do you suppose it was the big Wall Street firms that were buying at the top?
Nope.
Or do you suppose it was probably the person who turned on MSNBC or CNBC rather, and heard Cramer talking about XYZ stock, and then they all, you know, oh, they jump in because he gave them some, you know, and it could even be sound reasoning behind it. And then the rug always seems to get pulled out from under people. And that's the biggest problem I think people have with investing. There's two. One, they buy at the wrong time, and two, they don't know when to hold and when to sell. They don't really have any idea. When they get into a trade, they get in on somebody's advice, and then they never go back to ask the person, hey, should I still hang on to this thing, or is this thing something I should be getting rid of? And I will say this. If people want to be successful at anything, you have to become a student of whatever that thing is. And if you want to be successful in investing, you have to become a student. I break a lot of bubbles in people's lives this way. You can't just meander through life, you know, throwing money at this stock or that stock based upon some TV show you read or some website you go to. It doesn't work. You need to actually understand how the market works. And it seems complicated from the outside, and so people maybe don't want to bother. But it doesn't have to be complicated. You know, you just want to keep things as simple as possible. But most people don't want to do that work. And so for a lot of people, they're just never going to be an investor. For them, I just say, look, you know, buy one of the ETFs that follows the Dow, the S&P, the NASDAQ, or, you know, the Russell 2000 or the Russell 3000 or whatever, and just dollar cost average over your lifetime. Just, you know, keep dumping money in it. And
yeah,
when prices are down, you know, you'll buy more and that kind of a thing. But if you're not willing to do the work, it just doesn't make sense. You have to become a student. You're an analyst by nature. I think you know that, and I know your listeners know that. I meet very few people who know as much about so many different things. Like, you pull these people on or do interviews with them, and sometimes I even call you, like, at a break, and I said, that was, like, the best interview. That was fantastic.
Huh.
Because I learned so much from
that's
that.
Funny. I don't think of myself that way, but it's very kind of you. I just think of myself as a semi dumb bunny trying to get a little smarter. You know.
You know? Well, you know what's funny? First of all, you pull great people, and then just as I'm sitting there listening, I'll say, God, I wish I was there. I'd like to ask this guy this, and then you'll ask the question, and I'm like, wow, you know. And that's been happening for years that I've been listening to your show. Is you just. You seem to ask the question I want an answer to right when I'm thinking of it.
All right. Hey, I want to ask you a little bit about it. You're not a gold bug, although, you know, you and I have talked about some gold stocks and things like that. You're not a gold bug.
Gold. Yeah. Like gold.
But, you know, gold was pretty boring throughout this crash, wasn't it? Is that now, it did give back some yesterday. I guess it's back kind of, you know, almost where it was. It's still above 2,400, between 2,400 and 2,450. And
yeah.
Is this one of those things where, you know, has there been capitulation yet when it comes to, you know, this various markets? Or is this just kind of a, this is just kind of an opening salvo of maybe an overall correction? What does your gut say on that?
My gut tells me I don't have any idea. And my gut,
you say, honest answer.
Anyone,
thank you. Thank you. Because
as anyone else.
Yeah. All right. Good. Because how often do you hear someone in which, you know, it doesn't matter how badly real estate's getting tanked, it's a great time to buy. And in stocks, it's a great time to buy, right? It's always a great time.
Yeah. Okay. So here's the thing. Anybody who tells you they know how far a market is going or a stock is going or a commodity is going or whatever, they have an idea. Like they say to themselves, based upon my extensive analysis, I believe this is where the price of gold is going to go.
Right.
They don't really know. Nobody knows because you have no idea. All the markets are so integrated now across the globe. You don't have any idea what some hedge fund that might be worth billions and billions of dollars is doing in gold, what kind of speculation they have going or there. I don't really hear about cornering markets or anything. That's been gone for, you know, 100 years. But there's all these other things going on. They call them the black swan events, right? You know, these are the things that nobody knows about except the one hedge fund. And then finally, when they have to liquidate something or come out of the closet about bad, you know, mistakes they've made, then the rest of us get to find out the hard way. So nobody really knows. The best you can do is, in my mind, something like gold. Gold is one of those commodities that if you had bought every dip going back 30 years, you would have made good money in gold over that time. It's because gold isn't going away. It's not like pet.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gold isn't going away. And so you can say to yourself, is it a good value here? Or, you know, do I buy it on the run-up? Gold is not something you typically want to buy when it's running. It's something that when it pulls back, you want to buy, knowing it's never going away. And I don't even know if I would say that about feeder cattle or any of the other commodity markets. I don't really follow those markets closely anymore. I did like 25 years ago, but not so much now. I'll just check prices once in a while to get a general sense of where inflation is. But the markets are an incredible thing. And it's been a huge part of my life now for a very long time. I don't know what I would do without it. It keeps my mind fresh. It keeps me motivated. It keeps me excited. And there's so much stuff to know. Sometimes I just like to shut it off once in a while, but that's what the weekends and holidays are for, I guess. But for the most part, I think like what's going on right now, I mentioned to you when Joe Biden was elected, I said, look, Wall Street for the first time in an election dumped most of their money behind a Democrat.
That's right.
And I said they wouldn't let the market fall under his guidance.
So what, hearing this then, and knowing that we now have the Walls the Harris Walls ticket there, would you be looking for? And even though they always talk about the Fed being an independent agency, independent of politics, which I think is nonsense. Okay, if you're appointed by a politician, you're political. Okay, and So they're going to cut. You think they're going to cut before September? They're going to do like an emergency rate cut or something as they see this? And that seems to be what the market wants. And if the market's owned by Democrats right now, they're going to want that, won't they?
Well, okay. So I have to say something first. I heard a hedge fund. He's an ex-hedge fund manager, but he's someone I respect. Someone I read his stuff, and he seems to be on point. But he commented yesterday that he thinks Wall Street doesn't want Harris. That they're looking down the barrel of a crap ton of regulation.
Oh, so in spite of the fact that normally they would want that Democrat rate cut right now. Okay, that makes sense. That makes sense.
If the Republican candidate wasn't Trump, the money would all be going to a Republican. I'm convinced of that.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's Trump, the other side had to be so bad that they're willing to close their eyes and hold their nose and go with Trump. This isn't me talking. This is them talking, and that's talking with their money. And so, but what's happened is look at all these tech guys now who are getting behind Trump. And then Trump goes and speaks on cryptocurrencies, which I'm pretty sure he has no idea how they work or what they are. I don't mean to bash him or anything, but I listened to his comments when he was speaking, and it was still just a lot of rally stuff. It wasn't really him speaking in depth on the topic. And so, but I think what they're saying is we're less likely to be regulated to death by this guy than by this gal.
And so ultimately the big money then is going to say, take the pain right now. Would that be a fair assessment or a fair opinion here?
Well, this guy says that they're inflicting the pain right now so that voters will run for the exits on that Democrat ticket, that they're basically Wall Street, you know, shakes people up, gets people nervous. They don't have to have the market go straight down. Okay, they don't want to crash because then they don't want to get blamed for it. But if they can shake up investors and make them nervous and people begin to say things like, oh, you know, they're going to overregulate the markets and we don't want that. And, you know, those kinds of things start to get around and people with their 401ks, a lot of undecided people have retirement plans at their work and they've been there 20 years and they're hoping to retire on that money. And all of a sudden, somebody's messing with that. And they say to themselves, well, gosh, you know, if we're going to get less regulation and lower taxes from Trump, that's going to help my money. And I need my money. I like my money. My money's my friend. I've worked hard for my money. Then people begin to kind of say, okay, I like the social stuff from this side, but I like my money more. And that's why the economy is, you know, always front and center. People like their money. I mean, look, we all work hard for it.
Sure.
So I get it. But I do think he was the first guy to say that, but I do think that was a shot across the bow. Some people were speculating, some other analysts speculating, that the shot across the bow was aimed at the Fed that says, look, we could send this market down, you know, 3,000, 4,000. I'm talking about the Dow.
But it makes more sense that the real thing is screw people up, get them scared, get them, you know, we don't want a Harris-Walz administration. You know, honestly, they look at this, and what better way than to scare the sheeple, make them think, hey, problems are coming, right? Run for the exits temporarily.
And look, for the people who don't have money at work in any regard, right? They're working a job, they're barely getting by, they're renting, their rent's going up, all these things. They are going to lean towards Harris because to them, they see their money situation as a fairness issue, not as a maybe I shouldn't have picked this as my career issue. Mm-hmm. And so they're always going to have that. That is their base. Their base is people who think everything is unfair. The other side is saying, even if I might only have $50,000 or $100,000 in my retirement plan, they're saying to themselves, that may not be very much to a hedge fund manager.
But it's a lot to me.
It is, and I'm counting on that money. And if it's going to get deregulated, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of talking about taxing unrealized capital gains, things like that.
Oh, everything that Harris and Biden and now going to be Harris and Walz was talking about is about you know, inhibiting the ability for people to make a buck or two in what they're doing. Everything.
Yep. And I think that's going to be the difference. And when it comes to the big money, the tech guys are nervous now. And look, Google just got whacked with a court ruling yesterday for having a monopoly on search. They're not going to like that. I don't think they're going to switch over. I think they're going to stick with the Democrat Party.
And this is where really the money drives the politics. You know, it's not the campaign contributions necessarily as much as, I mean, it is the contributions, but you know what I'm getting at here, where the thumbs get put on the scale, right? And that's pretty sound. That's pretty sound here, Matt.
It's not just a thumb. It's the whole Sasquatch and foot.
Okay. All right.
Hey,
I really appreciate the take on that, Matt. That's why I bring you on every now and then as we just sit around and shoot the breeze about the markets. And, we're seeing a little bit of bloodletting right now, but it may not be the end of it. Is that fair? That one day may not be it? Or what do you think?
Nobody knows. You asked the question, I want to answer it. I don't think the Fed is going to step in.
You don't?
I think it sends the wrong message. I don't think that jobs report, before they made a decision on interest rates, that job report was already out. And a lot of people have said this, and I think it could be true. You know, they had that hurricane rip through Texas. And you know what? Those things have an effect on jobs numbers in a month because it's 1 month. And when all of a sudden you have a bunch of people, you know, it affects things.
So the jobs number may not mean as much if your job has been wiped out because the hurricane shut everything down. Okay. And bad weather.
Yeah. There's some things that come into play there. But I will say this, that the jobs numbers get adjusted lower over the last several months, so they've been getting aggressive. I'm not surprised. The economy goes through stuff. I'll bottom line this. If the economy is fine and people feel confident, markets are fine. It's when people begin to lose confidence, that's when everybody gets nervous. So, you know, as soon as Americans get nervous, then they pull in the horns, they do less, they spend less. Completely understandable. That's what everybody should do in tough times.
Well, yeah, sentiment matters. Yeah. Sentiment is a real thing. That's why they try to look at that, right?
It's everything. Everything I talked about right now, it's everything. Your sentiment, your reaction to events affects everything. So it always comes down to emotion. The carry trade unwinding. Oh my gosh, you know, carry trade. People don't know what it is. All of a sudden, people.
But it's being unwound. I don't know what it is, but it's being unwound and it's causing trouble. Woo!
That's right. Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, great talk as always, Matt. Always have you back, Matt Morsa. Thanks so much. We really appreciate that, buddy. It's 18 after 8. Ran a little bit long, but hey, I just thought it was a good conversation worth having on KMED and KMED HD1 Eagle Point Medford, KBXG Grants Pass, K290AF Rogue River. And what's the other one? I'm forgetting something else. K294AS Ashland. There we go.
Thank you from our entire team for voting us the best insurance agency in Southern Oregon. Hi, it's Megan McPherson, your local Farmers Insurance agent.